Blog Talk Radio.
Are you tired of being sheep? Well, so is he. Get a friend, get informed, and get involved. It's We're Not Cattle Radio.
Good evening and welcome to We Are Not Cattle Radio. I am your host, Jake Counts, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. It is the 12th day of November 2013, and it is podcast number 43 for the archives. Thank you so much for joining me here today. For those of you that are tuning in for the first time, I guess the best way to describe this show is I am a truth seeker, a lover of freedom for all individuals, and I just want you to have some semblance of the facts. It's really tough to get the facts in the world that we live in with all of the different, logical fallacies that play out in our day-to-day lives, and if you guys want to understand more about logical fallacies, you can listen to our past episode, which is slowly becoming one of the most downloaded podcasts I've had, and for good reason, because people want to understand how to get past the rhetoric, get past all of the partisan politics, all of the BS, so to speak, and to get down to brass tacks and find out what's really going on in the world and what we really do face. Inching closer to getting Karen Huds onto the show. For those of you that don't know, she is a World Bank whistleblower and have a ton of great questions for her, and I'm really excited to have her on the podcast. So that'll be coming up here, I would assume, in the next couple of weeks, but don't hold me to it. You know, sometimes people get busy. But anyway, the topic for the show this evening is going to be NSA surveillance. Now, I do have some other shows or clips that I want to play first. Before we get into the whole NSA, I'm going to have one of the hosts from the Journalistic Revolution, Josh Wiley, will be joining me here in the next couple of moments. But first off, since I missed it last time we did the podcast or the radio broadcast, transmission, what have you, I do want to play, in honor of Bill Cooper's, in honor of his death and the legacy that he left, I do want to play, once again, we talked about him on the last show, not to cut myself off there, but Bill Cooper was a conspiracy researcher, and once again, that doesn't mean somebody that's lost their mind. It means somebody that doesn't trust known liars and really wants to get into how the world really works. And I look at conspiracy research as trying to find out who really pulls the strings, not in our day-to-day life, but in the 10-year increments, 20-year, 30-year, 100-year increments, who lays out the battle plans for humanity, who executes the battle plans for humanity, and who decides where we go, what we do, and why we do it, what kind of technologies we'll have, you know, those types of things. Because I think that in a true free market society, we wouldn't have to worry about technology suppression and inventors being whacked and stuff like that. But in the reality of the situation, the reality of the real world, we do have to look at some of those things. And one thing that Bill Cooper did very well is research. Now, he took a different angle than what I take. But once again, that doesn't mean that that all of his research is for naught. So here is a prime example of the research that Bill Cooper did, and it's a little bit of a long clip. It's about 4 minutes, but this is from one of his shows that he aired. And then after I air this, Josh Wiley and I will start to go over the NSA, the new revelations on DHS, what DHS has the capability of. But also, if you're watching this podcast or if you're listening to the podcast and watching the images, not just seeing my logo, one of the other images will come up is the actual internet backbone that they've got set up. Now, me, myself, I have a couple of years in telecom, so I can speak to a lot of what these pieces of equipment do, how they work, and what the quote-unquote internet, which is basically just a bunch of computers hooked up together that exchange data, what that really does and how it works, and see if I can break it down pretty simplistically from the engineers that I've talked to and the actual individual research that I've done on the technology. So once again, thank you for joining us on this evening. For those of you that listen live, I really do appreciate it, you know, carving out an hour, even though it is probably one of your more fun and intellectually enlightening hours of your life. Every Tuesday and Thursday night, we try to keep it really simple. And moving forward, we will start to add some different tones to the show, and I'm going to branch off into some other projects. But keeping this show very simple and trying to give you a semblance of reality and at least a jumping-off point where you can go off and do your own research and have your own intellectual discovery, because that's what it's all about, being a creative, individual, free-thinking human being. That's what we strive for. And then we can all come together as a collective and create a better world. So here is Bill Cooper predicts 9/11, and I'll see you guys in about 4 minutes.
The largest intelligence apparatus in the world, with the biggest budget in the history of the world, has been looking for Osama bin Laden for years and years and years, and can't find him. Some doofus jerk-off reporter with a camera crew waltzes right into his hideout and interviews him. So why do all these fools believe this charade? That a CNN reporter and his little camera crew can do what all the money and all the assets and all the eavesdropping and all the intelligence and all the satellites and all the undercover operatives in the world can never do. It's because they're not trying, they don't want to. Osama bin Laden is their creation, and he is serving them well. I mean, is this some kind of incredible joke that people are so stupid they'll fall for this? And now we're being bombarded with messages that Osama bin Laden is planning to attack the United States of America and Israel. Let me tell you something. If he's an enemy of Israel and the Mossad can't find him, then this thing is the biggest joke that you ever heard of in your life. And I'm telling you, be prepared for a major attack. But it won't be Osama bin Laden. It will be those behind the New World Order who once again want to take the guns and the freedom away from the American people, because we're the only ones left in the world who can oppose the destruction of freedom in the world and the implementation of a one-world totalitarian socialist government, and that is the goal. And whatever is going to happen that they're going to blame on Osama bin Laden, don't you even believe it. Another social illusion, social engineering project to change the minds and the attitudes and the beliefs of the people of the world, and especially the United States, to bring about one-world socialist totalitarian government. I wonder what Osama bin Laden's targets are supposed to be. And if they don't, you know, if this doesn't materialize in the next 2 or 3 weeks, it will eventually materialize, because they haven't succeeded in getting the guns out of the hands of the American people, nor have they succeeded in taking our freedoms away. In fact, there's been a great awakening in this country and a big backlash against these Marxist, communist, puke-faced, lying, subversive, Nazi, jackbooted Gestapo thugs that is gaining momentum. And so I can tell you with a certainty, they must do something terrible in order to stop this backlash and regain the sympathy of the mass herds of sheeple out there. And supposedly, we're not the only nation searching for Osama bin Laden. So the vast economic resources, the vast technological resources, the vast personnel resources, the vast networks and intricate web spun over all these years by the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA can't find Osama bin Laden, but CNN can? What a crying shame. How in the world could this country of all nations breed such a dumbed-down, unthinking, illiterate, uneducated, stupid, ignorant population.
Well, Mr. Cooper, that is actually it's actually a threefold answer to that. One, you fluorinate the water system so it dumbs them down, and number two, you feed them genetically modified organisms to scramble their DNA, and number three, you actually make legal things like aspartame that were, let's see, what did it take, 5 times to get that through the FDA? And then Donald Rumsfeld finally squeezed it through, and now that it's in everything, and, oh yeah, by the way, it just turns into wood alcohol in your body, but that's no big deal, everybody. Everything's fine. So joining me on the line via Skype, if his mic is unmuted, is Josh Wiley of the Journalistic Revolution. Josh, are you there?
I am indeed. How's it going, Jake?
What's going on, man? How's it been?
Oh, living life, slowly but surely. It's really funny that you mentioned the aspartame and the genetically modified foods. I was in a diner the other day, and as you know, I'm a former smoker, and I have quit using an electronic cigarette-esque device. And so I was using it in this diner, and this waitress came up to me and told me that the table across from me would like it if I stopped because they have small children. And I looked over at them as they have three little kids, both guzzling down huge Cokes, eating this genetically modified junk loaded with wheat that will inflame their intestinal tracts and give them some form of digestive cancer by the time they're 60 or 65, if they even make it that long, if the diabetes doesn't set in first. And it's just, what a backwards world we live in. Parents can literally poison their kids right in front of you and be offended by water vapor.
Yeah, it's well, it's a microcosm of the world we live in, man. Just kind of like all of these new revelations that are coming out with Edward Snowden, which made me put on my I said basically, well, I went to Snooze Town because I've already heard all this racket before. William Binney and Thomas Drake are already told us all of this stuff.
A lot of other whistleblowers.
Right. So what makes Edward Snowden different? And this is what I wanted to get into. And I was watching a little bit of the video that you sent me, which was pretty enlightening. And I will link that to the website, wearenotcattle.net. But it was an interview with Buzzsaw, and they were interviewing what's the gentleman's name? He's slipping my mind right now.
John Rappaport.
John Rappaport, investigative journalist. And so they were getting into the Snowden leaks, and once you do sit back and after all the dust has settled, think about, is it really possible for a person that low on the totem pole to have all this intellectual data? And it might be one of those scenarios, and this is what a Rappaport was alluding to, that this is information they may want to have leak out just to see the reaction of the public. Or it could be a inter battle between the departments of the CIA and the NSA, which wouldn't surprise me at all either, seeing as the CIA has pretty much run our – I would say the CIA has been an integral part of the shadow government since their former president became our president. Now, I'm sure it goes back a lot further than that, but, you know, when I look at things, that's where it gets a little hazy for me. It's – wait a minute, the former CIA director is now our president? How does that work out? But what did you make of that?
Oh, man. Well, one, it's important to remember that the CIA was funded and founded almost completely by Bonesman from the Yale Troika. So, you know, we have to keep that in mind and take everything that they do with a grain of salt with that revelation in mind again. But I think it's really apt that you played that Bill Cooper clip talking about how the world's most complex and intelligent intelligence-related dragnet couldn't find Osama bin Laden, but a camera crew from CNN managed to waltz into his supposedly secret cave compound and get an interview with him. And I think Edward Snowden, barring his connection to the CIA before he went to work for Booz Allen at the NSA, barring his connections to Army intelligence with the brief stint he had with the Army, just think about the logic of this, people. We've got a guy who walks into the world's most complex, secure building, maybe on Earth, and walks out with
a thumb drive.
You know, with three laptops and a phone and a thumb drive, and then manages not only to get this stuff out of the country safely in a security panopticon that envelops all of our airports, he's able to get this information safely to the Guardian and sit down and have an interview with these people and have time for a cup of tea. It's really interesting also that you talk about, you know, the fact that this could be used as a potential litmus test to kind of test what the American people think about this kind of spying now that people at least are becoming more aware of it. It could certainly be an effort to get people back into the mainstream kind of nexus of news by covering this sort of information. And it could also be an internal war between the CIA and NSA, mostly I would say predicated on a war for funding, which is obviously becoming tighter and tighter by the minute as the United States government spends more and more of its money on Wall Street. But I think that all of those things can be possible at once. It's important to remember that PSYOPs typically have multiple points and tackle multiple goals simultaneously. So it would behoove our listeners to view this with a critical eye.
And that's what I found was so incredible. You know, RT and a couple of other I guess Russia Today is kind of mainstream, but you know, RT was one of the organizations that interviewed William Binney, and I got three clips here from his interview where he breaks down almost everything that Snowden broke down, but he broke it down, you know, years beforehand. So I don't think it was I think you might be right into the, you know, your analysis and the fact that maybe this was a litmus test on top of a test to see if the mainstream media could gain credibility once again. So we all understand that if anybody that watches the mainstream media, you know, I love you to death, and if you're listening to this show, you'll hopefully look at it with a more critical eye after listening to our broadcast than you ever would just by getting home and turning on CNN at 6 o'clock at night to find the real news, the quote unquote real news, which is, you know, typically run by one of six main media outlets, excuse me, but I digress. But when you look at the revelations that, you know, all these other whistleblowers at the NSA had, even before, Snowden, it becomes one of those questions that we need to ask ourselves. Why Snowden? Why is Snowden so important? Why is his revelation so profound, where everybody else that blew the whistle on this stuff before was kind of pushed off to the side and pushed to the back of the paper? Is it, Josh, is it something that the mainstream media, I guess, feels that they're losing such credibility and such viewership that they needed something like this to actually show the public that they might, you know, look out for their interests every once in a while? Or I guess we get into the debate of is he a pawn in the battle for funding between the CIA and the NSA?
Well, as I stated before, I think it can most certainly and probably is most certainly both of those things. Certainly, the mainstream media has a vested interest in maintaining its drastically declining viewership. But at the same time, I think Snowden's revelations are, or you could call them revelations if you aren't paying attention to the years of whistleblowers that preceded him, exactly.
Yes.
But at the same time, we have to realize that we live in an environment where mainstream media and the news cycle, to a certain extent, still controls how people view these events. So when we've got a guy like Snowden, who comes out with these revelations, which some of which are still being sat on by The Guardian, and given that Glenn Greenwald has now left The Guardian, it'll be interesting to see if those ever make their way out at all. But when this news story really was hot for the 2 or 3 weeks that it was the talk of the town, we have to realize that it was framed in a very limited manner. We were talking about two telecom companies. We were talking about the stealing of metadata only, which completely and utterly ignores the vast sweeping kind of stealing of IP addresses, of MAC addresses, of geotagging data, of reading emails, Facebook messages, all of this stuff, which is certainly a part of the NSA dragnet, was simply ignored. So with most people kind of thinking about this in limited terms, and again, living in an environment where people, for some reason, feel comfortable sharing almost every aspect of their life digitally and quite publicly digitally, I find it kind of disconcerting that not only did people were people not as concerned as they should have been about this, but that they've been prepped to not be concerned about it because they're already divulging most of their private lives themselves.
Sure, and it was kind of like an opt-in sort of thing. And you and I have talked about this. The social engineering construct, the people that run, once again at the beginning of the show, I talked about the people that pull the strings, the people that develop. You know, it's one thing to think about it like this. Think of the world as one giant corporation, okay? If you've ever worked in a corporation, especially if you've ever made it up into management, you understand how budgets go. You understand how planning goes. But your organization will have a 30, 60, 90-day plan, and then you'll also have a 1, 3, and 5, and 10-year plan. Where you want to be, where's the technology going, those types of things. And that actually holds true when you're talking about the stratum above the corporations and government that are actually very much interwoven now, if you haven't figured that out by now. But I'm sorry, but government and corporations play a lot of patty cake together, and then the politicians are basically the front people for both said groups that are working together and trying to progress humanity in a certain way. Now, sometimes you have a steering committee, and there's a bunch of steering committees out there, and Josh and I will probably get into this really in depth in the break-off that we're going to do, but you do have a bunch of different steering committees, and all you have to do is go do a few minutes of research, and you'll find out that the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, so a lot of these different groups are steering committees and think tanks for where they believe that humanity needs to progress to. And it's not necessarily in your best interest, because when they're looking at it, they're looking at it from a 30,000-foot perspective, much like a CIA or CEO would look at a corporation if the corporation's having some issues. So anyway, now to digress off of that, Josh, what do you think in the next few years we're going to see with the revelations as far as NSA spying, how people divulge their information, and what they're doing with all this stuff? And are people going to just let it happen?
I would be hard-pressed to think that people will become more uncomfortable with it than they already are. The information simply is out there. It has been out there for quite some time now, and the fact that people aren't outraged about it yet gives me little hope that they will be in the future, if I'm being honest with you.
Sure.
But we also have to realize that we have an incredibly unstable fiscal situation here in the United States. The likes of which, once foreign investors stop buying our bonds, most preeminently of those China, who's now very recently surpassed America in terms of oil usage and imports, which is a huge threat to the petrodollar going forward. And I would be, again, hard pressed to see a situation where that kind of fiscal downslide does not occur without some kind of large false flag or catalyzing event, as someone like Zbigniew Brzezinski would call it. So keeping all of those things in mind, I think that when the other foot hit the ground, you know, in all of these circumstances, I can only see the panopticon rapidly increasing at that point. We already have countries like Japan, where simply to enter, you have to give your a fingerprint and biometric data. In places like Germany, we are seeing armed guards, or we have seen for years now, armed guards with essentially MPs in fatigues at essentially every airport. So I really do think that this venerable panopticon is only set to increase, and it's about taking personal responsibility for your digital life at this point. And hopefully, you know, moving out of the city. I did want to touch on that point. You made that was a great analogy, talking about the world as a corporate entity. You know, because the United States of America, as I'm sure you know, is a corporate entity. The Act of 1871 that established the District of Columbia.
How dare you read history?
Yeah, I know, right? But it effectively incorporated the United States and created two entities, the one that most people refer to as the country, and the other one which has a private ledger and profits off of your enslavement.
Absolutely. Well, here is we're rolling right along here, and I'm sorry I got distracted towards the end of that little rant reason, so it was very distracting. But anyway, I do have a nice clip for you. This is about a minute and a half, so check this out. This is the future of buying and selling, and this actually came out about 6 months ago, and it was touted as being the new great thing, and it was called face deals. Now, Josh, I'm sure you're familiar with this, but I'm going to go ahead and play the clip for the listeners, and then we can kind of break this down on the backside, and you know, piggybacking on exactly what you said about what's going on over in Japan and everything. This really could be the new buying and selling. And then at the, I guess towards the end of the broadcast, maybe we need to open up the discussion. If you guys are out there listening, you want to call in and join the discussion. But I think that what we're going to do is we really need to have a debate on, is this a way towards a fully transparent society, or who you believe is going to be at the helm, I guess, which camp you would fall into. So here is the face deals clip. Everybody enjoy. We'll be back in a minute and 30 seconds.
We asked ourselves, why haven't Facebook check-ins gone mainstream? Check-ins provide a powerful mechanism for businesses to deliver discounts to loyal customers. But few businesses and even fewer customers are taking advantage of this. So we set out to evolve the check-in process by creating a seamless method for checking in and getting deals. Face Deals is an automated check-in system using passive facial recognition to notify you of in-store deals that are customized just for you. Cameras have been developed to identify Face Deals participants in a matter of seconds. To get started, log into Facebook and grant Face Deals permission. Next, verify your likeness to complete your profile. When a face is confidently recognized, the deal is set into action.
This is very non-threatening, Josh.
Face Deals dynamically optimizes your deal based on your Facebook like history and delivers your customized deal to your mobile device, all while checking you in. It's that simple.
It's that simple.
Face Deals is currently beta testing with select Nashville businesses and will soon roll out in major cities worldwide. Developed by Red Pepper Lab.
We're non-threatening. Okay, so as I was joking through that last half of the clip, but in all seriousness, that could be what comes to America. Actually, there's really no averting it. The singularity is rapidly approaching, and the question is, where does our privacy fall in all of this? Where does the public you begin and the private you begin? I guess that is the best point. Now, to define those terms so we can all be on the same page, I define the private me as the me that is myself, Jake Counts, that is sitting in my living room, you know, with all my doors closed, with all my blinds closed, and with my curtains drawn. That would be the private me. The public me, however, starts as soon as I walk out the door into the public view and off of my property. That's where my public view would be. So I guess the debate needs to be, do we sacrifice privacy, not for security, but for convenience, and for a new optimized world? Josh, I understand that you have a different knowledge level than most people, and understand what the, I guess, I'll let you break it down for yourself, but what do you think all this is going? Could it be that it's just going to a fully functional, fully transparent society, or are we being really processed for total enslavement?
I think both at the same time. You know, this has been a staple of technocracy since Lenin wrote his treatise on economic theory. But you brought up such a pertinent point in the difference between every police and spying state that mankind essentially has ever known and the one that we're seeing rapidly erected here in America and other parts of the Western world, in that whether you look at the Nazi Empire with the SS or the Soviet Union with the KGB, these spying implements were essentially forced on the people at the end of a barrel of a gun. And I'm not saying that threat certainly doesn't still exist in America, but what's so imminently different about the American spy grid is that it's being sold to us and people are buying it, mm-hmm. you know, and for a matter of convenience. I think it's wonderful that I can have a cell phone in my pocket that has live news updates from real news sources, that I can listen to podcasts and radio programs like yours and mine and constantly be edified educationally without having to listen to the garbage that's on the radio. But simultaneously, people need to recognize that this device that, again, was sold to you is being used to spy on you. You know, during that Facebook clip with face deals, which recently rolled out in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, it mentioned the Facebook check-in system, which, if you're mm-hmm. not familiar with that, is a system where you use Facebook Mobile to essentially tag yourself at a given mm-hmm. location, if you're out with friends or whatever, through a given time period. And this isn't something that Facebook does automatically. This is something that people choose to do. Sure. And a lot of people use it, and
that would be considered, and everybody, that is what metadata is, just to clarify for everyone. That is, in essence, metadata is the geolocation, the time spent, all of that stuff.
Exactly. So we're seeing a public that's being sold this technology and is eating it up. You know, we have talked numerous times in the show about kind of the analogy of the Matrix, and We're starting to reach a point now where there is a fine line between reaching into the Matrix to pull people out mm-hmm. and becoming integrated within it. And as we see this kind of program expand rapidly, we're seeing all this geotagging and metadata being stolen from cell phones in cities without the acknowledgement of the user. Mm-hmm. We're seeing at near-field magnetic technologies being implemented to kind of broadcast you advertisements on a short range basis. You know, when we get to the day where you are going to have to scan your face on your cell phone and input a thumbprint just to make a Google search, mm-hmm. then it's time to really start asking yourself, is this something that I want to be a part of? No matter how much, how large a part of your life it may be, and I think we're rapidly approaching that point. I don't know if you agree with that, but I would think that you do.
I would agree 100%, and it's not that we're trying to agree with each other the entire time, but it's just your analysis and my analysis are pretty much, I guess, in cohesion, and that's why you and I have such great conversations, is because we're looking for ways and for ideas to. It's not that we want to stop the system. We want everybody to really logically sit back and take a deep breath before you get, you know, encapsulated by all the fancy bells and whistles that you can have, and being able to stream. You know, this is one of the things that I thought was kind of cool. I got to see my brother this weekend, and we were driving back from my parents' house in rural Georgia. And he wanted to watch some of the football pregame, and he just starts streaming it on his phone. And I just thought to myself, wow, that's kind of incredible that we can actually, you know, we can stream live television wherever we are. And, you know, technology amazes me. Just think about where we were 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we had dial-up internet, everybody. Now we can literally stream live television on our phone. So what's the next 20 years going to look like if the technocratic comptrollers don't suppress all the new modern technology like the Tesla technology and all these other things that are really coming to light and really going to create a different marketplace? And, you know, when I spoke with the comedian Lee Camp, he and I talked about this, it really does come to a point where now at a system level where the elite power structure understands that the time is running really thin as far as monetarily goes, and they're just grasping at straws trying to grab everything? Or are we on the cusp of a new human revolution where there's going to be an awakening process, not just here in America, but all over the world, to the fact that individual liberties and individualism and creativeness and I guess new thought processes are what's going to really propel us into the future, you know, along with being mindful of the technology that we're deploying and what it's really asking people to do. Now, some people will accept anything that would probably jump into the matrix now. I mean, you look at, you know, they have a petition out for over 300,000 people, I think it was, that have already signed up to go on a one-way trip to Mars. So you do have a portion of the population that really is, you know, there really is up for anything new and fancy and glitzy and shiny. But I think that, you know, as we start approaching the singularity, as we start using these technologies, you know, understanding that it is a two-way street, we do need to start asking ourselves, you know, who's really getting all this data? Where is all this stuff going? And is it really in my best interest to give them all this data on myself?
Yeah, absolutely. These are all pertinent questions that people need to be asking themselves. And I do think that I need to, or I guess I would like to make the distinction between technology and the technology currently controlled by the corporatocracy. As I mm-hmm. said before, I'm not Amish. You know, I don't think that light bulbs are evil or anything. In fact, I think technology is a wonderful thing for humanity, provided it can be done sustainably. I mean, certainly
that would
that
would be a very condescending thing for somebody to say that made some money on Bitcoin. That would be very condescending for you to think of any other way as far as technology goes.
Exactly. And I also, I mean, even as someone who made a lot of money off of it, I still have a lot of certainly reservations about Bitcoin. But I do think that that's an important distinction to make. Technology is wonderful for humanity. I have, again, some reservations about how our technology currently is manufactured and how we get some of the resources that go into technology, things like lithium, which is mined mm-hmm. primarily in Africa and completely unethically at the end of the barrel of a gun. But
isn't
again,
that also a big cash crop for them in Afghanistan? Isn't there a big lithium deposit in Afghanistan as well?
Most certainly, which were supposedly just recently discovered, but exactly.
I just saw the moon for the first time last night, Josh.
Exactly, you know, these things. It's hilarious what they'll try and pawn off on you as a recent discovery, much like the current natural gas and shale oil reserves found all over North America. They've known about these for years, people. But
no,
yeah,
didn't they have that back in Bush's heyday? That was his big discovery. It was George W. said, "Oh, we got all that oil underneath, you know, Colorado," and everybody's like, "Shh, shh, shh, everybody, hey, easy." All right, I'm sorry to cut you off, man. Go ahead.
Exactly. No, but we do have a program that is rapidly trying to use up the rest of the world's kind of natural resource reserves before we utilize our own. And now that we're having to start kind of utilizing some of those resources, I think that that's should be one of the preeminent indicators of the death throes of the American empire. But again, there's a huge distinction between technology in general and technology controlled by psychopaths. I would love to have a cell phone with complete connection to the internet where I can look up things all the time and talk to my friends completely and utterly uninhibited, but that's not the world that we live in, and currently we really don't have any technological implements that aren't, in part at least, controlled by the Panopticon. So, and for our listeners, if you don't know what the Panopticon is,
I was just about to ask you to define that, but go ahead and define it, man, if you want, or I can define it as well, either way.
Well, I don't want to do all the work for everyone. I think that people should look it up for themselves and find an interesting bit of history that you've probably never heard about.
There you go. That's go. Once again, everybody, use grammar, logic, rhetoric, use the trivium, and go have yourself some fun and learn about the Panopticon and how it was used and what it does. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely, and we really are coming to a point now where, as Zbigniew Brzezinski terms it, the global political awakening. or the apocalypse, as so many cultures have called it. You know, of course, we have a very skewed definition of what apocalypse is, but in its Greek, apo is essentially to reveal and or to lift a veil, and a calyptine or calypsis is to hide great information. So it literally means the lifting of the veil, the revelation of truth. And we're certainly seeing that escalate rapidly in humanity right now, but specifically in the Western world as it pertains to kind of the revealing of the true paymasters and controllers of society. So we are reaching a point where we can have one of two things, or I guess three things. We can have a revolution of consciousness. We can have a revolution of blood, guns, and guts. Or we can roll over and become impoverished slaves of the state and live in Agenda 21 pre-manufactured, predetermined megacities where they ration your food, which of course will all be genetically modified, and meat will be given to you only on your birthday.
And it was really interesting, and I was didn't mean to cut you off, but I was reading a. My mom gets these scientific magazines, and I can't remember which one this was, but it talked about the world in 2032. And if I can get her to give me the magazine, I'll mail it to you so you can read it. But it's actually a little bit of preconditioning, but also a little bit of exploratory thinking, in the fact that it has a. Instead of having a microphone that would be on your phone or what have you, you would have a sticker, and the sticker would actually double as the microphone. So you would put the sticker on your arm or whatever, and it would be able to pick up, all the things that you were saying. And then it had all these new technologies where you had shoes that made you run faster and a suit that made you jump higher. And it also, this is where I started to get a little creeped out, is it started to have like a genetically engineered pet, where it was a pet that was a mixture of an old saber-toothed tiger-looking thing and like a modern cat. So basically, they spliced the DNA of the two and created a whole new species, and it was like a little pet. And then as I was flipping through it, guess what I saw? You had your own, it was your own meat, but you could actually build it with a 3D printer. So that's where I kind of got a little scared, in the fact that, we did just have the first 3D printed metal gun come out. So where is all this stuff going, and are we ever going to see something that would resemble like a Gattaca scenario? Not to bring it back to something that's a very, I guess that was a movie made in the 90s, but it was pretty insightful, in the fact that it was almost like a eugenics-based world where everything was based off of DNA and predetermined algorithms, and the way that, I guess, Ethan Hawke was the main character, and not to digress too much off of this, but it does kind of go along with what we're talking about here. But I guess Gwyneth Paltrow, was the other actor in the movie, and the way that she found out that this guy was the perfect guy for her was she went and stole a sample of his hair and took a sample of her hair and went to the genetic doctor or whatever, ran the two to see if they were capable or compatible with one another. So is that a scenario where we're actually going to trend towards, and is that the new human species, or do we get back to basic human function and really progress logically instead of just all at once? Because right now it does feel like a river of technology over our heads, as we have newer, latest and greatest phones, tablets, what have you, comes out. I think that the big questions are being missed, in the fact that we don't really sit back and think about the ramifications of what's really going on here.
I mean, that's absolutely true. Another great piece of prophetic science fiction on that subject would be George Lucas's THX 1138, an example of a completely planned, genetically engineered society where love is essentially preordained and emotion is bred out of you through drugs, and you're living in this Huxwellian future, this combination of the worst of both of those societies. Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, we really need to get back to what I believe it was the Rio Conference in 1992 or 3 that established Agenda 21, which is the operating model of the society of the future that people are trying to see. And it goes under the auspices of sustainable development or creating a sustainable world. A lot of different think tanks have been and non-governmental organizations have been founded under exactly that auspice. And they come into local towns and essentially buy up and or take over controlling of planning for undeveloped land that is an effort to kind of get people out of the countryside and into these sort of pre-planned, pre-made megacities. And that's really the choice that humanity is going to be asked to make, I think, very shortly. And it's something that informed people should be thinking about now, because you are going to have a choice. You're going to either be ushered into this planned society where everything is given to you and you are given an expiration date based on the things that they're putting in your body for you, or you can live a much probably more difficult life, but at least a free one, in a rural area, kind of growing your own food and making a local economy and exchanging with people like an actual human being. And this is the choice that humanity is going to be faced with. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of really, really great, nice, well-meaning people who are going to go along with this, either because they think that the corporatocracy knows what's best, or simply because they've lived a life that's been very prepackaged up to this point in corporate America, and are now essentially comfortable with living an easier life where everything is given to you, as opposed to having to, you know, essentially value yourself by the sweat of your brow.
Absolutely, and I'm watching television right before I came on air. I was enthralled because there was a special, and I guess it was a couple of hours in a row. It was David Blaine doing magic to people, and those kind of things always pique my interest, because you wonder how the illusion takes place. Like, where am I missing the sleight of hand? How did he get that past everybody? That kind of thing. But what really took me were the commercials. And the commercials, as you and I talked about on the last show with the logical fallacies, it was interesting. It's like the more you spend, the more you save. I mean, if you think about that in terms of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, that sentence doesn't even hold water, because it is a complete and utter false choice. The more you spend, the more you save. It's inherently two different words going in two different directions monetarily, but yet they throw them together to entice you to do something. And I think that's what we really need to do, is start thinking critically, whether it's as a society as a whole, as a consumer-based society, and think about, are these really things that we need, or are we really just being propagandized in order to buy these particular products and support these larger corporations? Or do we want to go back to, like what you said, and go to a smaller, you know, a community-based commerce system? Now, the one thing that I will add to this, everybody, is that yes, it's going to be more expensive to do business with the lower with the local community store, but at the end, the money stays in the community, and then that person goes and buys from somebody else that owns a privately held business, and that's the way you fight it, is by voting with your dollar. Now, once again, I understand that it's going to take a little bit more money, but at the end of the day, it boils down to what Josh says. Do you want to live in a society that is going to be pre-planned, and that you're going to have all these different facets of your life taken care of, which would make your life very, I guess, very thoughtless and easy to muddle through? Or do you really want to live free and be a free-thinking individual and push back on the system? Now, one of the things that we didn't get into yet, Josh, and I do want to touch on this article before we get off the show today, is an article that broke on InfoWars via StoryLeak and Anthony Gucciardi. I have a ton of respect for Anthony Gucciardi and all of his work over at StoryLeak. So I did want to talk about this, and it says, Snowden-level documents reveal stealth DHS spy grid. And that is actually the image that you guys will see if you're listening to the rebroadcast via PC. If you're listening to it on podcast, this is going to kind of fall short. But what it does is it really does give you an idea of the system and the cloud and how everything really works. Now, myself, once again, being in telecom for as long as I have been, a lot of this stuff really does make sense to me, so I'll try to break it down. If you can, you know, see the image, download it or whatever, you can kind of walk through it with me. The internet is basically a bunch of computers that interact with one another. It's not like a pipeline, as the guy from Georgia said that one time. It's a big pipe. It's nothing like that at all. It's interchanging of information through a bunch of different servers placed strategically all over the world. And what happens is they have to ask questions. It's yes or no questions in order to try to access certain information. So there's typically a couple of what they call switches or hubs that they have to go through before this data gets filtered out and moving in the right directions towards the right computers to handle the type of transaction or, action that you're trying to complete. So if you're trying to complete a VoIP phone call, for instance, it's going to go from your VoIP handset to the switch in what's called the NOC. And then once it goes to the NOC, it's going to go out to the internet, and then it's going to find that number. You know, they draw the internet as this big cloud. It's going to find that PSTN number, and it's going to go search for the IP address that's located with that PSTN number or the actual number itself. So if you're calling a cell phone, it's going to look for your cell phone's identification number, and then it's going to connect you to through the internet, and now you have a conversation going through a bunch of different computers and switches. So if you can stay with me, I'll try to get there. Now, what they've developed or what they're revealing is that there is a piece of equipment that sits in the NOC just outside of where your original call would take place. So your call goes from your desktop phone or your cell phone, however you want to look at it, to this switch that resides in the NOC, and then it goes to another switch that actually basically takes all the data that you have and stores it and then transfers your data out to whomever you're calling or what have you. So in essence, it'll hold up to, I think it says in the article, it'll hold up to over 1,000 different tags. So every time you place a phone call, once again, the metadata that they're talking about is being captured by this device that sits in the NOC. And what it does is it captures all, 1,000 GPS locations of the cell phone users. So it'll hold all of your last GPS locations from your last 1,000 phone calls. So basically being able to pinpoint where you were throughout the day, track you, trace you throughout your entire day, and it can even turn on, we know this through the Telecommunications Act, they can even activate your device even if the phone is turned off. It can activate the GPS chip in it, because there's actually three different chips depending on which cell phone you have. You have a GSM labeled cell phone and a CDMA. And CDMA are the proprietary providers are Verizon and Sprint are your two biggest CDMA providers, and AT&T and T-Mobile are your GSM providers, and they are that's why their coverage isn't as great, because GSM is a technology that typically is used more in Europe than it is in America. That's why you can take your T-Mobile phone anywhere in the world, because it's already synced up to those towers. So anyway, long story short, they have this piece of data that was actually revealed now through this document, and I will actually repost this in the We Are Not Cattle news feed, so you guys can see that, and I'll do that right after the show, so it'll be up here in the next few minutes. But what you need to realize is that this is a pilot program out in Seattle, and if it's something that's rolling out through Department of Homeland Security, it's being used to go through what's called a Threat Fusion Center, which is set up for communication for the local police force and the feds in order for them to communicate and have all this data. Now, all of this sounds well and good if you're trying to catch a criminal. But the question is, do we really need to have all this data stored on us as we move through our society? Is this something that we need to push back on? So, Josh, did that make any sense when I was talking the technical aspects of this, or was it all just a bunch of telecom mumbo-jumbo?
No, it absolutely did. And I guess as a bit of a techie, I'm familiar with those kind of terms and the breakdown you gave, and I thought it was fairly concise and got to the point. Now, at the same time, I do want to say that, to me, the most interesting part of this story, it challenges some fundamental beliefs about law enforcement that some people within a liberty mindset have, because there is a lot of vitriol aimed at groups like the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, ATF, sort of federal agencies, and more of an apologetic tone towards local police departments, saying that
they receive federal money and they have money in the threat fusion centers too. They receive grants as well, so it's and I know it's hard in municipalities to turn down millions of dollars from the federal government, but also think about what you're being asked to do. Once again, sorry to cut you off, but continue.
Oh, no, but yeah, that's the point that needs to be made, is that these people are not your friends. And if things did go south and they continued to receive a paycheck, albeit probably a much smaller paycheck than what they're currently used to, these people would point guns at your family, because they're already stealing virtually all the aspects of your private life that you don't want them to touch. The way that these kind of this telecom spy grid is currently set up is that either your internet service provider or your telecom company has access to all of your data for a certain period of time. I think most of them it's 90 days, and then they're obligated to delete it. But what happens is that we have these massive kind of data conglomeration centers. I know Verizon has a few in Texas that were leaked on Cryptome.org as they were being built. And these centers are essentially mainlined directly into fusion centers all around the country and NSA sort of databases buried deep in the ground, I'm sure, outside of Washington, D.C. So that's how the Feddies kind of get your information. But local police departments, you have to go through a little bit more of a bureaucratic kind of system just simply to gain access to that information. So as this document clearly shows, these kind of local police departments in Seattle, I think was the example, are bypassing that nexus as it's currently set up, whether that they don't have access to it or simply don't have the funds to access it. They're saying, essentially, screw this, we're just going to steal the information ourselves. And people need to be really concerned about this, because I'm sure that this model, if it's not already implemented in many other cities, will certainly be implemented very shortly.
Like I said, that federal funding will be very enticing to the smaller municipalities that are really just looking to kind of make their checks and provide people a good living. And it's not that, Josh and I have any vitriol, or myself, speaking for myself, I don't have any vitriol towards the police department that uses this as a kind of a blind trust in the fact that they believe that they're going to go catch a bunch of bad guys with this, because you probably could catch, a bunch of criminals. But the fact of the matter is do you start arresting people for pre-crime? Do you start arresting people for, being at the wrong place at the wrong time? Do you start watching people's every move to think, what if he does something? And that's where we really need to get to, because I have friends in the police force. I have friends that don't want to do stuff like this. And I have friends that think that this is a good deal and it's going to keep people safe, because that's the mantra and that's the mentality that you've been fed since you were a little kid, that police keep you safe and that criminals are always, dressed in black hoods and stuff like that. And I think that what we need to come to, a fundamental understanding of in the United States is that criminals aren't just an invasive species that come into America to commit crimes and then they just go to jail. Criminals are people just like you and me, because I think that all of us have done something. There's an article out that we all commit 3 felonies a day. We all break the law in some way, shape, or form. It's just some people get caught, and those people are deemed criminals. So in essence, we have all done something to the effect that we could have been, put behind bars or done something stupid that could have gotten us in trouble with the quote-unquote law. But it doesn't mean that we need to have the largest prison population in the world, having 5% of the population and 25% of the world's criminals. So anyway, Josh, closing comments from you on this stuff, and then we'll wrap it up. We're running up against it.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say really quickly that, pre-crime is already here. That kind of methodology of law enforcement has been here since at least 2010, when IBM rolled out its predictive analytics program, where you essentially have a tracking mechanism and the ability to identify people based on their past encounters with the police, and kind of head off crime that way. And what we really need to start asking ourselves is, what are they going to do with all of this data that they're rapidly connecting? How is that going to be fed into a predictive analytics type system? And how long does it take until these people stop going after essentially quote-unquote hardened criminals? And how long does it take until they start coming after you for late bills or your credit score or being late on your taxes? I don't think it's very far of a line until it's very far until we cross that line, because as we're already seeing, they're already completely and utterly comfortable enslaving and really torturing to a certain extent nonviolent criminal offenders. I think nonviolent crime is a bit of an oxymoron, but we are rapidly moving into this society. And while you were sleeping, predictive analytics and pre-crime has already been implemented in much of the country. So. It's,
absolutely,
it's
and that
IBM does
their nice little promos of putting the cop at the right spot, and I'm all for that if it's going to, you know, quell crime. But you know, we have to look at this as a double-edged sword. It can't all, just because it's nice and shiny doesn't mean that it can't stab you in the back. I think that that's the one thing that we all need to keep in mind. And one of the things that was really interesting is I was watching an interview that Lee Camp did with a gentleman by the name of, I've got his actual, Dylan Radigan, who used to be a MSNBC host, which I don't agree with a lot of things that MSNBC does, but evidently this guy took it to another level and was doing some really hardcore, hard-hitting journalism, and he had Lee Camp on his show, and Lee Camp and he were talking about 10 topics that the mainstream media won't touch. And one of the things that they were talking about was the actual the prison population in America. And Lee Camp made the statement, if we keep trending the way that we're trending, that everybody in the United States, every single human being, would be locked up in the next 20 years. That's how bad it is, everyone. So I think that we do need to teach people about jury nullification, you know, nullifying unjust laws or laws that you think that are on the books that are crazy, like you can't strap your horse to a tree in the, you know, at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, or else you're going to go to get the death penalty, or just something as simple as a simple possession charge for somebody that has like maybe a gram of marijuana, or somebody that blew a 1.0 on a breathalyzer that when you watch the video, they're completely coherent and completely cogent and not swerving or weaving or anything like that. And the only reason they're in court is because they mouthed off to the police officer. Now, one of the things that I will advise you, even though I don't give legal advice, if you do get pulled over, be nice to the police officer. He's just as nervous as you are. And I have a lot of friends that will probably give me some crap about that. But at the end of the day, they're trying to do a job as well, and their job's really difficult. They don't know what they're going to walk into, so that's just my take on it. I'm always trying to engage with police officers, and as I like to call them, peace officers, because that's what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be keeping the peace, not going around and rounding up criminals. But now that's what the mentality and the motive has changed to, is that we're the good guys and we got to go find the bad guys. Like, people are out there just doing bad things, and we got to go find them. That's not it. You're out there to protect the peace. You should go back to patrolling, doing things like that, being involved in your neighborhood, not looking down on the people, you know, when you're on duty as some sort of entertainment or some sort of crime that you have to stop or some investigation that you got to crack. I'm not saying that's everybody. That's about probably 5% of the police force, but you know how it works. You know, 5% of the people give the rest of the police force a bad rap. So, Josh, any other things you want to say before we get out of here, man?
Oh, no, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head, but I would almost expand your kind of analysis of jury nullification and bad laws. You know, if people aren't hurting under other individuals, I don't really care how much meth or crack or cannabis you have on you at the time of your supposed arrest. You know, these are nonviolent crimes, and in many areas mm-hmm. of the country, we're looking at a situation where not only does the United States government fly in these drugs and profit from the sale of them, they also profit from the incarceration. And in many communities, it's the only real way to make a living for a lot of people, especially mm-hmm. in some of our inner cities. So we need to really view jury nullification on a wide scale and realize that the people who are making our laws right now, as well intentioned as some of the voters may be, are not your friends.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you guys want to hear some really some real life testimony to what Josh just said, you can go listen to my interview that I did with Freeway Ricky Ross, where we talked about his upbringing in the in Los Angeles and how he was a big kingpin for the CIA drug the Iran-Contra scandal. But he talked about how it was the one thing that was actually saving his community, because it was the only thing that really gave them hope and gave them jobs, and that nobody really wanted to commit any crime because crime bought the police. So everybody kind of, you know, acted as it was just a regular commodity and traded it. And even though it was damaging to some people, it's in my personal opinion, it's no right for you to tell me or anybody else what they can and can't put in their body. That's their body. They have just as much right to be on this planet as you do, and they got just as much right to decide what they can put in their body that you do. So that's it for the show, everybody. Thanks for listening. Sorry we went into a little overtime, but you know what? This will make for a good podcast. Once again, thank you to Josh Wiley from the Journalistic Revolution. You can catch them as Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. Is that correct?
Yes, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
There you go, and you can find that at Liberty Movement Radio, everybody. So once again, everyone, get a friend, get informed, and get involved. Share the podcast with people you know, people you like. Let's start having a dialogue about things that really matter. Take care, everybody.